This is Age of Treason Radio. On the White Network.
And Daddy always smiled, took me by the hand, saying someday you'll understand. Well, I'm here to tell you now that you never mother's gone. You better learn your past, you better learn your young, for someday it never comes.
With your host, Tan Stoffel. The title of this installment is Jewish Crypsis. The nature of Jewish power is based in large part on the nature of Jewish identity. So in the next few installments, I'm going to examine Jewish identity in more detail. It's multifaceted and it's complicated. It took me a long time to figure out a lot of this stuff. And it's a logical extension of what I've been talking about for the last few installments. It's intimately related to the Jewish problem, to anti-Semitism, to Jewish power. Probably the most important aspect of Crypsis, and the reason it's important to talk about it, is how can you assess and evaluate Jewish power, the extent of it, the nature of it, the threat it poses, or the threat that you think it might, doesn't pose, if that's your feeling about it. How can you have any sort of evaluation of it if you don't know who is a Jew and who isn't? And that's at the crux of this, is who's a Jew? It's important. This past week, I wrote a blog post titled Mandela and Friends. Nelson Mandela is dying, and there's some controversy about that, that it's a long, slow, drawn-out thing. He's in a vegetative state right now. But one of the stories about it, I was following the news on it, cited it an old friend named Dennis Goldberg, and immediately the surname Goldberg pinged by Judar, and I thought, well, I'd like to know a little bit more about this close friend. And so I went to look him up, and sure enough, you find out he's not just an old friend, he's a comrade in arms with Nelson Mandela, was there in the early days. And the Wikipedia article on Dennis Goldberg makes a point of letting you know that he's white. In three paragraphs, they mention white four times. As an example, he joined other leading white members in forming the Congress of Democrats. He was the only white member of to be arrested and sentenced in the Ravona trial to life imprisonment. Goldberg described the issue of being white and involved with the armed struggle as follows. Quote, being black and involved meant you had support of many people, and it meant you got to be part of a community. Being white and involved meant being isolated, unquote. Of course, he's a Jew. And actually, I have to say, to be honest, I'm guessing that he's a Jew. Nowhere have I found anything that states Dennis Goldberg is a Jew or identifies as a Jew. And this is the nature of Jewish Crypsis. It creates this sort of ambiguity about who's a Jew and who isn't a Jew. He's got a very Jewish name. He's got a very Jewish face. He is married to a woman whose name is Jewish. Their revolutionary activities are very Jewish, typically Jewish traits. He's in the wiki page, it talks about Israel coming to his defense or advocating for him to be released from prison at a certain point. So there's all sorts of little signals that this guy's a Jew, but it's as often is the case, it's hard to find an explicit statement. This guy's a Jew, and he does what he does because he's a Jew. Another article, though, talking about Nelson Mandela, equating him with Moses, that I cited in the same blog post, also made a point of mistaking not just Goldberg, but the other Jews around Mandela as white. But they did it a little bit more subtly. It was a liberal Jew, Lazar Sedelsky. Okay, so that's the kind of explicit acknowledgement of a Jew that I'm talking about. Sometimes they do that. Lazar Sedelsky, which is a pretty Jewish name, so it would be hard to disguise him anyway. But he took an interest in a young Mandela, gave him his first job as a law clerk, and in Mandela's words, became, quote, his first white friend, unquote. So they're quoting Mandela, mistaking Sedelsky as white. The Jewish Journal, which is what this Mandela is Moses article comes from, is, of course, a Jewish publication. It's aimed at a Jewish audience, and Jews are well aware of who's a Jew, or they're much more aware than your typical white person is as to who a Jew is, what it means to be a Jew, and who is a Jew, who isn't a Jew. Mention of or conflation of Jews with whites is, I found Jews, and this is quoting Mandela apparently, I found Jews to be more broad-minded than most whites on issues of race and politics, Mandela once wrote, perhaps because they themselves have historically been victims of prejudice. Well, that's the Jewish telling of the tale. That's the Jewish narrative as to their history. And as I pointed out many times, they were the victims of prejudice by whites. They were oppressed by whites. So Jews, if you hear this historic tale of victimhood of theirs, they're telling you that Jews are distinct from whites, different from whites. Whites are the enemy, the oppressor, and they're the victims. And the final sort of cherry on top of this article is at the end. It says, Jews who could have lives of white privilege in apartheid South Africa, align themselves with Mandela. And it poses that as a sort of conundrum, as an anomaly. And that's the main point I wanted to bring up here, is this: they insist on conflating Jews with whites, identifying Jews as white. And then, at the same time, they acknowledge that creates a conundrum, creates an anomaly, creates something confusing and a sort of cognitive dissonance. And the cognitive dissonance is caused by holding these two contradictory ideas in your mind at the same time. The idea that Jews are victims of white oppressors and distinct from whites, and at the same time insisting that Jews are white. And the way to resolve that contradiction is to throw out the Jews are white assumption. It's a wrong assumption. The only sense in which it's right is that whites mistake Jews as white, because whites are actually not discriminating enough about who is us and what's best for us. Jews are much better at that. So notice also that the phrase white privilege was used there retroactively about South Africa. I don't think that phrase was much in vogue back when Mandela was being released from prison and whites were losing power in South Africa, giving up power. But more on white privilege in a minute. I have some more to say about that. As I say, they act as if this is a puzzle, a mystery, and it's actually pretty simple to solve the puzzle. And they're sort of, the gambit is that they're counting on people to not solve the puzzle, because that would be anti-Semitism. And they know people, especially white people, are scared of being called anti-Semites. And so they'll stop those thoughts in their mind before they ever reach their lips and won't say it. But this posing and passing as white does great harm to whites. This Jews pass as white, both through their own efforts and through whites acceding to it or acquiescing to it. And then they wreak havoc as insiders, the barbarians inside the gates of the city. And why do they do that? Well, it's not because they're white, and that's not a mystery. It's because they have a racial animus towards whites. And if you listen to their victim narrative and their oppression narrative, that whites are the oppressors and they're the victims, they're describing it to you, the racial animus. They flip it around, of course. They make it sound like whites hate Jews. Personally, I think it's a mutual thing because race is real and they're distinct racially, Jews and whites. And, it's perfectly natural for racially distinct groups to have animus toward each other. What's unnatural is how Jews paint it as an entirely white phenomenon, that it's whites to blame for it 100%, and that Jews are totally innocent. That's what's unnatural. Now, one of the things that's interesting about South Africa is that the narrative in South Africa, the rationale for why the whites had to be removed from power in South Africa, is that it was white minority rule, that whites were a minority, and so they didn't deserve to rule. And this is interesting because in the United States and in most other Western countries, minority is a magic word that means you're allowed to do whatever you want. You're supposed to be protected. And as I've talked about in the past few installments, what we have is Jewish minority rule in America. Now, what's the difference between the white minority rule in South Africa and the Jewish minority rule in the United States? Well, in South Africa, whites ruled overtly, whereas there was apartheid, and it was acknowledged by government officials and in government documents. In the United States, Jewish rule isn't acknowledged openly. As I've said before, it's illegitimate because it is secretive, because it is on the down low. It's not up front. It's there. Everybody can see it, especially the people in the elite know it. But you're not supposed to talk about it, and there's punishments for you if you do talk about it. The main thing being that you're excluded then from any potential for power within the system. There's a spectrum here, too. I don't want to misrepresent all Jews as engaging in crypsis. As we know, there are Jews who are quite openly Jewish. They're either – it's a combination of their name. Maybe their name is Benjamin Shapiro. They have a very Jewish-looking face. They're balding. They wear a skull cap. They wear glasses. They have this nasally, whiny voice. And then, of course, they identify themselves as Jew. Speaking as a Jew, I think this or that. And they moralize to you as a Jew. That's the key phrase. That's on one end of the spectrum. And you can imagine the Hasidim, the Hasidic Jews, these Orthodox Jews who actually dress differently to set themselves apart. It's very obvious. They make themselves obvious as Jews. And then on the other end of the spectrum are people who hide themselves as Jews in all of these different respects, that they have a name that doesn't sound Jewish. They maybe don't look so Jewish, and they don't identify themselves as a Jew. And there's a whole spectrum in between those two extremes. I use the term passing, and in case anybody doesn't know this, I think most racialists understand it, but passing is the ability of a person to be regarded as a member of a social group other than his or her own, such as a different race, ethnicity, caste, social class, gender, intelligence, age, or disability status, blah, blah, blah. Etymologically, the term is simply a clip form of the phrase to pass for or pass as in a counterfeit passing for the genuine article, or an imposter passing as another person. And the main point I want to make about this is that passing is a form of fraud, really. And that's indicated by the use of those terms, counterfeit and imposter, the comparison there with those terms. It's often, especially today, it's flipped around, as most of these things are, and it was the evil white people making you pass. But the reality is that people wanted to pass because they wanted to get in. They thought it was good to get in, and they wanted in. And so they were willing to engage in fraud to get in. It's like sneaking in to anything, that you know, sneaking into a concert, sneaking into a movie without paying, knowing that you shouldn't be there. That's what passing is. Now, crypsis has a biological definition. In ecology, crypsis is the ability of an organism to avoid observation or detection by other organisms. And it can be used by a predator to disguise themselves or to avoid predators. Related words are camouflage and mimicry. So you'd use camouflage to disguise yourself so that you're not seen. And mimicry is, acting as if you're something you're not, looking like you're something else. Now, Kevin MacDonald dedicated an entire chapter of his book, Separation and Its Discontents. Chapter 6 is titled Jewish Strategies for Combating Antisemitism. And keep in mind, combating antisemitism is really just code for fighting for the best interests of Jews, or even more straightforward, combating for the Jews. You're combating antisemitism, you're combating for the Jews. The first section of this chapter 6 is subtitled Phenotypic Resemblance, Crypsis. And he's talking about the outward appearances resembling the host society in which Jews live. And I just want to read a few paragraphs here from that chapter. The data summarized in PSDA, that's People That Shall Dwell Alone, Chapter 4, that was another earlier book of his, indicate that there has been a powerful trend for Jews in traditional societies to maximize phenotypic differences between themselves and host populations by a variety of segregative practices. These are the Hasidic Jews, the Orthodox Jews that stand out so much, and because they want to make themselves stand out and be different. Nevertheless, there are many instances in which Jews themselves have minimized these differences. A particularly interesting example is crypsis. When threatened by severe sanctions, Jews have, quote-unquote, converted to other religions, practicing Judaism in secret, and ultimately becoming overtly Jewish again when the threat has passed. Crypsis is, quote, as old as the Jew himself, unquote. And he cites somebody named Prinz for that quote. This is another aspect of the duality of Jewish identity, that they have these two extremes, that some Jews maximize differences in order to remain separate, and that's their explicit goal, whereas others try to minimize those differences and assimilate to a greater or lesser extent, some assimilating entirely and ultimately forgetting that they're Jews and leaving the Jewishness behind. And other Jews, and this is my real focus, is the Jews in between that are well aware of their Jewishness and their Jewish identity and how important it is to them, and yet keep it pretty much to themselves, keep it secret. Now, related to this, ties into a blog post I made back in April in the wake of the Boston bombing. You'll recall that David Sirota wrote an article where he actually hoped it was a white American, he said. And I titled my blog post, Sirota and Wise Define the New Normal, White Privilege as a Jewish Construct. And it's because Sirota, in making that statement, he got all the attention, but he was actually citing Tim Wise, who has written several books. He's a professional anti-racist, and anti-racism, of course, is just anti-whiteism, and you can see that very clearly in how Tim Wise does what he does. And one of his books is titled White Like Me. And that's how he does what he does, is he poses as white and he lectures white people about how stupid, crazy, and evil racism is and how they should feel guilty about it and feel bad about white privilege and how to recognize white privilege. And that's what he dedicates a lot of his effort to. So Wise's article about it actually said, white privilege is knowing that even if the Boston Marathon bomber turns out to be white, his or her identity will not result in white folks generally being singled out for suspicion by law enforcement or the TSA or the FBI. In short, and this is a little later in the article, white privilege is the thing that allows you, if you're white, and me, to view tragic events like this as merely horrific, from the perspective of pure and innocent victims, rather than having to wonder and look over your shoulder and to ask, even if only in hushed tones, whether those we pass on the street might think that somehow we were involved. Now, this goes back to the passing thing that I was talking about, that it's he's projecting here a guilty conscience. I don't feel, when Timothy McVeigh bombed the federal building in Oklahoma City, I didn't feel guilty as a white person. Why should I? I had nothing to do with it. Even being white, to me, didn't seem like it made me have anything to do with it. But for somebody who's passing, for somebody who knows what they're doing is wrong, that they're getting away with something, of course they're always worried that they're going to be outed for that and that somebody might ruin it for them by doing something stupid and overt that calls attention to all of them as a group. So Wise thinks that way. And the reason why he thinks that way is because he's a Jew. He's not white. And the clearest example of that that I've ever found is an article that he wrote back in 2000 where he says, right, the very first sentence is, I am a Jew. And he goes on in this article to talk about we, meaning Jews, and our ascent and our community and we Jews. He writes, our ascent has been every bit as contingent upon good fortune and the skin we're in as anything beneath it like superior culture. In fact, a good deal of our community's advance, our community, he's talking about the Jews, including himself, has come at the direct expense of black people and would never have materialized in the absence of their oppression, coupled with a willingness by most Jews to undergo a transmorgification that, in effect, allowed us to become white, quote unquote, become white. Something we could do by downplaying who and what we were and hiding in our epidermal camouflage. He's revealing there that as a Jew, that's how he sees it, that Jews have to change who they are to become white, quote unquote, become white, and that their epidermal camouflage, their skin, is what enables them to do that. Transmogrify is an interesting word that he chose there. It means to change or alter greatly. To change into a different shape or form, especially one that is fantastic or bizarre. So it's a bad thing, he's saying, when Jews change radically into whites. It's a radical thing and it's bad. He's saying Jews aren't white. Tim Wise's hostility toward whiteness springs from his Jewishness, and he makes it clear in that article in 2000. So here he is 12 years later writing white like me nonsense. And he fools a lot of white people into thinking that he's white. Now, David Sirota took that article that Wise wrote about white privilege and the bombing, and he went a step further and said, let's hope – this is what he actually titled his article – let's hope the Boston Marathon bomber is a white American. And he gives pretty much the same reason that Wise does, that he thinks it's because whites won't be blamed collectively for it if it does turn out to be a white guy. And I've written two blog posts in the past, the incidents that I've seen just that come to my mind immediately are Nidal Hassan, the Fort Hood shooter, who was a Muslim and because of his Muslim identity decided to wage a one-man jihad and killed a bunch of people. And how immediately the president of the United States said, hey, we shouldn't jump to any conclusions about this. And the chief of staff of the army actually said, as great a tragedy as this was, it would be a shame if our diversity became a casualty as well. In other words, it's the opposite, of course, of what Sirota describes. It's the power structure. The government of the United States is set up to benefit non-whites, non-Americans, non-Christians, not, you know, anybody who's the other is put up on a pedestal and defended and protected. Whites aren't. There weren't any whites that came to the defense of whites when Sirota wrote his piece hoping it was a white bomber. He, too, has an article from the past elsewhere where he's clearly identified himself as a Jew. As a Jew, I am disgusted by these tactics coming from Lieberman, he writes in an article from 2006. As a Jew, there's that magic phrase. But it was even more clear in the wake of the Boston bombing when he had a debate with Ben Shapiro, a conservative Jew, more of an overt Jew who wears a skull cap on his head and, because of his name is much more clearly identified as a Jew, and I don't think makes any secret of his being a Jew. But those two had an exchange where they talked about this whiteness business, and Sirota said, you don't believe America is as nasty or xenophobic because you're white and you don't have to face it. And Shapiro says back to him, racism exists, but it's not the dominant force it once was. Speaking of which, I find it odd that Jews are considered members of the white privileged class. When less than two generations ago, whites wouldn't let us into their country clubs. That's the gentleman's agreement thing. I mean, the Jews never forget that they were excluded at one time from country clubs two generations ago. And Sirota comes back and, of course, agrees with them on that point. What they're agreeing on is that Jews aren't white and that Jews aren't privileged. So that when they talk about white privilege, when any of these Jews are talking about white privilege, they're not talking about Jews. They're talking about white people. They see a distinction between Jews and between whites. Another stark example of Sirota's different feelings about whites and Jews was a tweet that he made, probably complaining about somebody giving him grief about his hoping that it was a white bomber. And he wrote, out of all the hate mail I get, none is more depressing than the stuff that includes Holocaust denialism. That's some effed up repugnant shit. Well, there he goes, feeling sorry for himself. Here he's talking about white privilege this, white privilege that. We should blame white people because they can take it, because they're not going to be held accountable as a group. But he feels sorry for himself as a Jew. He feels sorry for the Jews. What is Holocaust denialism? It's when people refuse to accept the Jewish version of history. When they deny the Jews that right to tell us what to feel guilty about, what we're allowed to think, what we're supposed to think is good, what we're supposed to think is bad. When we reject the Jews' demands that we do that, that's denialism. From a Jew's point of view, it's a horrible, horrible crime. To hear Jews tell the story, they're the ones that are always being wronged. And in the case of Crypsis, it's clear they're the ones who are wrong. They're disguising themselves. They're doing something that they know is wrong. They disguise who they are and how they feel. They hide their Jewish identity. They hide their animosity. They explain it away and they justify it by some injustice that they concoct that they probably really don't care about. It's really just transferring it. And even these assimilated secular white like me Jews, like Sirota and Wise, see Jews as distinct from whites. They guilt trip whites for white privilege and for being too discriminatory. It's an inversion of reality. Jews are the ones who are privileged in ways that whites aren't.